freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
Oh, Bruce Drennan's perfect for this, Brock. Ah, we just stink, man. I think that's the way a lot of Hawks fans were feeling after Sunday night. Ah, we just stink, man. Just give them back to the Jets or whatever. Like, I think they're, instead of the Mets, just give Adams back. He's not playing. Give him back to the Jets,
I
man.
Say. Send him to Mahoning Valley.
I say send him back to LSU. I mean, like, I think that's it was sort of a, that was a downtrodden experience after that. I mean, everyone just feeling real lousy. And it's funny because you led every second of the game, right? You never trailed until the very, very end, right? Other than that, the Seahawks never trailed in that game. But to miss all of those opportunities, to give up that many yards, and to lose to a division rival in a place where you've actually won a lot. It's funny, everybody hates that stadium for good reason, and certainly the worst loss in Seahawks history took place there. But you've actually handled Arizona pretty well in their building. Now, you had a lot of bad injuries. You right, like there've been, you had
the
6-6
tie.
I know there've been some
bad games. The middle
finger,
the bird.
But you, for the most part, have won there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
I mean, the Marshawn Lynch run was. I mean, there are all these other plays where you found ways to beat them. It's here that you've really had trouble with Arizona.
Your sheriff in town.
I think the problem you run into in that game is, and this is why I think there was such a strong reaction afterwards, Brock. That's the team that many people expected to see this year. Too many mistakes, not enough, well, hold on, no pressure on the quarterback, and when it mattered, they couldn't stop anybody.
Yeah.
Four straight times at the end of the game, Arizona marched down the field effortlessly. Four times in a row. Four. Not like, hey, it came down to the last moment, and yeah, the quarterback, who, by the way, is obviously a superstar, went down and drove the field. Four times in a row, needing points, down the field. Luckily for the Seahawks, once they missed. And you still couldn't do anything with that. But four times,
yes.
Four times, they went down the field effortlessly.
Michael, I'm looking at my screen right now. The Seahawks are giving up 479 yards a game.
Is that bad?
And as you know, yards have never been like the stat that we point to. In fact, we've kind of, you know, vomited those out of our mouth when everybody comes back to passing yards and total yards, all about yards. And Russell's going to have 5,000 yards. And a lot of times yards can be misplaced. But when you're 32nd in the league, giving up 479, and the next worst, I just watched in person. In fact, I've watched them twice, and they got their head coach fired. One time was Dan Quinn's Atlanta Falcons. Do you know how many less yards Atlanta's given up? The Seahawks are at 479 yards a game. That is 32nd in the league. Do you
know
Atlanta
that's only
is
because I saw Jim Moore tweeting it. It's like 520?
It's or 420. They're at 425.
Yeah.
You're giving up 50 more yards a game.
Yeah. Half a field.
Yeah.
Then the second worst
but
Atlanta
Brock,
Falcons.
You say half a field. The Seahawks just think of that as two plays. So it's, you can call it what you want. You think of it as 50 yards being kind of a lot. This defense is like 50 yards. That's like a play or two. Whatever, man. So the other team gets one or two more plays a game. Sorry.
And the good news is Dan Quinn's available. Seahawks fans clamoring for him. You could potentially move up to the 31st ranked defense, which would be amazing.
They had the four. If they'd be 6-0 if they had the 31st ranked defense.
You just knew is in walking this tightrope, as they have all season long, of Russell just being spectacular and the offense scoring at will and finding ways to win and making the one play against Minnesota with the fourth down stop, making the one play against Cam Newton on the fourth down at the goal line. Like, okay, they can rise up, make just one play, and then the offense will finish it. The offense will get it done. And you know what? The defense did give you two extra possessions.
Yeah, I mean, they gave you the opportunity. I mean, say what you want. The defense is obviously the problem and not the offense. But they did give the offense a couple of opportunities to win this game. I mean, they came up with the two turnovers they needed, right? They had Puna punch, and you got did you know Quandre Diggs was still on this team? I had forgotten that the guy was even here. He had that pick, and I was like, what number is that? Who is that guy? I have no... Oh, Quandre Diggs! Right. I remember him. He's been invisible for five games, but there he is.
He's lost four safeties, and he's still been invisible.
Really, it's quite remarkable. So they had the ball to do.
They had the ball. They crossed midfield. There's a minute 48. It's first down in overtime, and you're thinking, okay, you're either going to win or tie. You know, there's no way you're going to lose. And in fact, a tie with Arizona already having a couple losses would actually not have been the worst thing in the world.
No, would have been fine.
So, you know, it's a minute 48. You got the ball first down. You've crossed the midfield. After they miss the kick, you're going to, you know, all you're thinking is you're going to win or tie. You're going to win or tie. But then, you know, Russell makes a catastrophic mistake.
Yeah.
Catastrophic mistake. One of his three interceptions when he threw it 50 times. Eventually gets burned against that pressure. Thought they were all going to come. They did not. They bailed out. They pick him, and yep. And, of course, Arizona was going to drive down and kick the game winner.
Well, I want to come back to Russ here in the offense in a minute. Just to focus on these couple of things that we expected this year, right? We expected that they were going to have problems getting to the passer, right? That's not a mystery. We spent every minute of the offseason talking about how they didn't have any pass rushers. And it's been problematic for them, obviously, this year. As you've seen Cam Newton throw for a gazillion yards. He hasn't done squat since, and he might lose his job in New England. You saw Dak do it. You saw, I mean, like, everybody, the Falcons, who were terrible, did it. I mean, everybody's thrown for 400 yards on this team. So we knew that would be a problem. Zero sacks, zero pressures. Zero quarterback hits.
Yes.
Zero sacks, zero quarterback hits in a game. Brock, how hard is... Now, I know Kyler Murray's... Oh, he plays a role in that.
No question.
Although, I think he was the most sacked quarterback last year.
Yeah, I don't think that was a hallmark of his game this year either.
But he does... But he just... I mean, I think that you've got to be careful with him. Like, I think...
Yes, he scares defensive coordinators, you know, to death.
Right.
And the Seahawks are not alone. I've watched most teams attack him similarly. They're going to, you know, the Lions, who actually beat them in their building and forced three picks, you know, just played basically very similar to the Seahawks. We're not going to pressure. I think the Seahawks brought more than four on 7% of their snaps, which was or 8%, which was the lowest in the NFL of any game this season.
I don't blame them, though. I mean, look, I know that we're going to get on them for that, but you know, if you're looking for an example as to why you don't get any pressure, look at the whole Shaquem Griffin thing at the end of the game. He's not rushing.
No.
Right? In any other game, you would be sending him in that moment, and that's literally what they've done with him against Miami, et cetera. But in this game, they're like, yeah, no, we're not going to rush
him. No, and that was at least 20-plus snaps where they played that scheme, or he was on the end, but they were going to rush three, and he was going to be the spot because they felt like, actually, he's the one guy that could play that position, maybe rightfully so, in the league,
well,
who runs 4-4 and actually be able to corral him.
Yeah, so, I mean, the pressure thing was a problem. The thing is and we've been able to say throughout the year, well, you have Russell Wilson. So your defense can kind of do what it needs to do, but at the end of the game, you have Russell Wilson, and that's going to end up being perfect. The problem here, Brock, is that while that is true, your defense is turning every other quarterback into Russell Wilson also.
Yes.
So it's great that you've got the best quarterback on the field, but literally your defense is making the other quarterback look as good as Russell Wilson. So you're losing some of the edge that you have by having arguably the best quarterback in the game right now.
Correct. And this is a season, by the way, where you're not playing Big Ben, where you're not playing Tom Brady, where you're not playing Drew Brees, where you're not playing Aaron Rodgers, where you're not playing those guys who perennially, you know, like Russell, with the game on the line, the fourth quarter, you are scared to death to give him the ball. You have played Cam Newton, who has been a disaster, other than the Seahawks game. You have played Kirk Cousins, who that has never been his calling card. You're playing a young guy in Kyler Murray in year two, who, by the way, if you watch the tape, was getting a bit frazzled, you know, was, you know, has this season thrown a bunch of picks and gotten rattled and threw for 33%, I believe, against Dallas the week before. I mean, couldn't hit the broad side of the barn and could not have been in better rhythm, had more fun playing the game. You know, Jersey didn't even get grass stained once, didn't get hit once in the pocket.
Is it okay that I like him? My hatred for the Arizona Cardinals, for the Bidwells, for Bruce Arians is no longer there. I mean, it's well known. I hate the Cardinals. I don't even like Larry Fitzgerald. I know it's awful. I'm a horrible human being, but I don't even like Larry Fitzgerald.
You don't have to.
Good.
I won't make you.
I really like Kyler Murray.
Well, he's a winner. That's what you like. The dude is just a
I shouldn't
scrappy,
like anything about him.
Feisty winner.
He quit on baseball, which I can't stand. He played at did he play at Oklahoma?
Yeah.
I hate the Sooners. I can't stand them. I hate them more than I hate Ohio State. I can't stand anything about. Well, I shouldn't like this guy at all. But oh my god, I can't help like watching him, man. He's fun.
Well, you love him. You're taller than him. You look down on him.
So, yeah,
you like that.
It's probably
they say that Russ is less than an inch taller than him. Yeah. Come on,
yeah.
Russell looks like it looked like DK chasing down Buda Baker. Russell towers over him, doesn't he?
Whatever that dude had in his socks at the combine was impressive.
Yes,
very very impressive. When I stood next to him in person, he was tiny.
He's a tiny guy.
Little
That's
hands.
He looks 5'8".
He looks 5'8".
Yeah, he does. He does. He looks like Flutie. Though. He looks like, you know, I mean, Flutie actually was somehow proportional at 5'7", so maybe he doesn't look like Flutie. This guy looks just shrunk. He's just like a shrunken down, 5'8", but man, he is quick.
He's really fast.
Quick. He scares defenses to death. And Seattle went in, and this was what was hard for me, Mike, on that side. I think what is hard for a lot of Seahawks fans is, yes, you can rationalize in your head going into the season and go, okay, I know we're not going to get a lot of pressure. I know that front's going to be problematic. We'll see if Daryl Taylor or Alton Robinson can kind of grow up, or maybe Rasheem Green take a next step, or LJ worthy of a first round pick. And maybe we'll be pleasantly surprised and we'll get to 30 to 35 sacks and just be middle of the pack and just kind of survive. And you kind of rationalize that way. And then you're sitting here through six games and you've got 9 sacks.
Yeah.
I mean, you're on pace for like 24 sacks.
Yeah.
And you're not getting home, and you're just simply I heard Mike Pettine, the defensive coordinator in Green Bay, say this, for better or worse, and it's an entirely different philosophy, and you know what, they get blown out as well, they get beaten up, it's not perfect, Rex Ryan, everything else, they get exposed, but there's something to, just from a mindset standpoint, and he said, you know what, our defense, the way we're built, is we are not built to survive, we're built to thrive. And that has stuck with me this season. And when I think back, you know, to the incredible run that Pete had through, you know, 4 or 5 years, even though they were a zone defense and they weren't a blitz fest and they weren't unsound, they never, it was, you got to deal with us and we're going to thrive in what we do. And now it just feels like total survival mode. And I know we'll get to Bobby later, and
you're like,
he's at
you're
the
like
epicenter.
Jeff Van Gundy hanging on to the bottom of a long
yes.
morning's feet, just hanging on for
yes.
dear life.
Yes, hair flopping, you know, just a mess. It's just a, I don't know. It's hard to watch. As you've watched all these Seahawks games for all these years, you started to see the decline the last couple years, right? You started to feel some of it, but at least Clowney at times was a game changer. At least he had to deal with him. At least he had pick sixes and tackles for loss and flash plays and Frank Clark the year before that. I mean, at least you felt some kind of thrive. You felt some kind of aggression.
Well,
you felt some
kind of
that
at the beginning of the year with Jamal Adams. I mean, to be fair,
yes.
the guy they gave up 2 first round picks for hasn't played for them in 4 weeks.
And he yes. made Bobby Wagner look a lot better,
Absolutely.
Too. Those guys
true.
Were everywhere
so,
when
well,
he was on
so,
the field.
So there's cause for hope. I mean, I know Pete yep. is going to be optimistic, as he should be. He doesn't really have much of a choice. But, you know, we
yes.
knew that these things were problems, and they are playing without arguably their best player on defense. So we'll see whether or not. It's not like they looked great when he was out there, but I don't think they looked as bad as this. I felt like that helped. You know, and here's the thing. Regardless of all the problems on the defense, if you don't make, I mean, this is what drives me crazy. The mistakes they made in the game, the mental mistakes.
The ones they hadn't made for 5 weeks until this one?
Yeah. Remember we said this isn't a Pete Carroll team. They don't play good defense. They throw the ball and they don't make mistakes.
Went through
it was
a whole
bizarre.
Game without a penalty.
And now all of a sudden, they're back.
They started halfway
with
through the fourth quarter.
It wasn't so much the running part of it that turned around. It was just the mistakes. I got
Well, they self-scouted, Mike, during the bye week and said, we're not doing
what
we've done.
I heard that was your thing.
we'll get to that.
Mean tweets to come. But so just a few of the mistakes. And this one, I didn't really – like, I kind of noticed it in the moment, but it wasn't until I saw Jeff Schwartz tweet later that I kind of – they punted with 4 seconds left.
Yeah.
On the play clock, yes.
On the play clock,
yep.
Sorry. The last punt they had in regulation that gave the Cardinals the ball back so that they could drive down the field and kick the game-tying field goal. This was they got a first down, and then they tried to get another first down. They got to 4th and 2, right? And they decided to punt, which, by the way, they had to do, and we'll get to the reason why in a moment because it's another mistake that leads to it. But on 4th and 2, they decided to punt, right?
Correct.
Yeah, and that was the right call. The game, it's a field goal game. You absolutely do.
Otherwise,
you're giving the ball at midfield.
And you might lose the game.
Yes.
I mean, you're giving them enough time to beat you if you don't. So you have to punt the ball there. I have no issues with that decision. But you snapped it with 4 seconds left rather than bleeding the clock all the way down to 1. Now, you could say, hey, you don't want to make a mistake. It's not like the quarterback looking up at the play clock and he knows exactly. No, you don't want to make a mistake in that moment. Okay. Although, quite frankly, it probably would have helped them if they take.
I was going to say, take
it
a 5
but that's
five
fine. Take that as it. We'll get back to that. They only had 1 timeout left, which of course they wanted to preserve just in case they needed it.
Well, we won't talk about the other two, but carry on.
But they'd lost the other 2 timeouts. If you hadn't blown your other 2 timeouts, absolute obsession of mine.
Yes.
You could easily call one there at 1 second left on the play clock, thereby saving you 3 seconds. How many seconds were there on the clock when the final field goal to tie it up in regulation was kicked?
2 seconds, Mike.
2 seconds!
Larry Fitzgerald took that ball. He ran it to the ref. They spiked it with 2 seconds.
Now, does everything change? Maybe. I don't know. I can't tell you that but 2 seconds. Oh, and by the way, speaking of those 2 seconds, do you notice they added back a second when they reviewed the locket catch that they never should have even had to review to begin with?
Frustrating. Not the
bizarre.
Greatest night from the refs.
They did add a second. Well, that one probably wouldn't have mattered. But that's a huge mistake, Brock. That potentially
You take the delay game, the way that Dixon can punt the ball and everything else. You just take the delay game. You take 5 yards. That's going to be no big deal. Those 5 yards, the 4 seconds are a bigger deal than those 5 yards.
I don't know. I guess from that at that spot maybe, but I don't know that I agree with you on that.
Okay.
Because if they end up just making a field goal, if they get to the 52 and they kick a 52 yarder and you're like, hey, they would have missed from 57. I think that there's something there, but
Then there's also something to Dixon's punt.
Well, that's my next mistake.
Yes.
As much as we all have loved Michael Dixon, he's had a great year. He punted that ball in the end zone.
Yep.
Anybody see Johnny Hecker last night? Monday night?
Yeah, 5 times.
I mean, like almost the exact same type of situation near the end of the game. They had a bigger lead, but he stuck it on the 5.
Dixon had done that multiple times all game. He got amped up there. He's supposed to be calling the snap count cadence.
Yeah, well,
and then he booms a punt
that's
2 yards too far.
That's the job.
The
that's the biggest punt. That's the only one that matters.
I'm not killing him for it. I mean, this isn't to like fire Michael Dixon, but that's a mistake. You have to count that as a mistake. If you pin them inside the 10 instead of allowing them out to the 20, maybe.
Well, even the 15, even the 12, even anything. Every one of those yards is critical, especially the way the Seahawks just gave them play after play after play. Just said, here's 10 yards. I mean, now, defensively in their alignment, both at the end of the first half, the end of the game there. I mean, just here's 10 yards. Just take it.
And maybe their thinking is, whatever you do, I don't care. Just make sure you don't, you know, screw it up. Like, hey, we'll take him at the 20. Just don't have like a 12-yard.
And he's just trying to get that off. They brought both their outside. They're sending 10 guys.
All true. But at the same time, you sure would like to find a way to not put that thing in the end zone. Okay, fine. How about the penalty on Mayoa?
Oh, my gosh.
Now, at the time, I was thinking to myself, it's not that big a deal. Yeah, this isn't that big a deal. Like, either way, they're going to need both, and this gives them more, like...
There was a chance that it was going to eat up more time.
Right.
And if the Seahawks held them to 3 still, but it cost them another 40 seconds,
that's a huge win
for the Seahawks.
And that even if they did get the 7, that it would take so long that you'd get on the other side of the 2-minute warning. And that. But no, they did it in 2 plays.
2 plays.
Just awful. Just
horrible.
Awful.
Horrific
defense. That's at least physical mistakes, and they're a separate issue. We're talking mental mistakes here, right? And Mayoa's is a mental mistake.
2 of them on the same play.
So at the time, I thought to myself, maybe not that big a deal. But as I think about it now, they got the ball back. They get a first down. They get another 8 yards. It's now 4th and 2 at like the, 40 or something like that. If you're up 7 instead of 3, you can go for it.
You wouldn't.
I don't know. I think you might. I think they might.
This defense?
You got to make them. No, because then you just say they've got to drive the entire length of the field in less than 60 seconds. Mm. I think you absolutely punt it. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yep,
I'm not sure. I don't know. I'm not entirely sure.
It may change your third down call. You may actually throw it. Maybe. You may do something creative. Okay. You may do some movement. You may, you know, run a play instead of the worst possible play call you could have called, which is what they did on third and two.
Now, there were some tough calls in there. That was a flip nine.
I think Russell might have even checked to that.
Yeah.
Checked out of a pass to that.
There were some moments that were great.
That's a bad call. That's a bad play call.
But it could have changed your play calling to be up seven instead of three. But up three, you're worried about losing in regulation if you go for it. Forgetting about giving up the tie, you're worried about losing.
After Mayo honestly jumped off sides, I was like, man. And then, you know, the double whammy with
the offsides they could handle.
Yeah, but yeah, honestly, I thought this may actually, to your point, play to their advantage.
It might have.
This may take now them to the 2-minute warning, and all you need is one first down, and the game is over.
But no.
But they gave up. I mean, that was embarrassing.
So sad. It's similar to what they did against Miami, where you're like, hey, just hold them until the 2 minute. Nope, can't do
it. Can't.
Just
can't tackle.
So you compound those mistakes along with the Russell picks, which we'll get to, when you just start adding all of these things up together, Brock, yeah, you end up with a loss, and they deserved that one, man. They deserve that L.
After so many amazing plays, like when you watch a game tape, there are so many unbelievable Tyler Lockett's catches, both of them. Both of them. He had 15 of them. Just extraordinary. DK's effort, which I know we're going to get to. I mean, there was the run game, the offensive line. There was just so many tremendous. Puna Ford's actually punch out on Hopkins. There were some tremendous plays. And you were in control. You're up 10 with 4 minutes to go. Kyler Murray airmails one on third down. Like, he's rattled. They got to settle for a field goal. The game is over. You're going to win this game. And then, yes, you just...
Funny, though, it didn't feel that way to me. And generally, I'm a positive guy watching these games, more so than you, Mr. Negativity over there.
Yep.
But I never felt good about this one. The whole time, even up 10, like, you got to be up more than that. My trust level in this defense is the only time I really legitimately thought, okay, they're going to win the game, was after actually twice, when Russ got the ball to start overtime and when he got the second time in overtime after the missed field goal.
Yep.
Both times, I'm like, okay, Russ is going to go down. Here we go.
Yep.
Certainly the second time, Russ is going to kick a field goal, right?
Correct.
Look, if you want to be the leader for MVP and the train has left the station, Collinsworth and everybody else, you got to convert one of those drives in overtime. That's the job.
Especially the second one.
That's the gig.
Yep.
Again, like, but even more so than Michael Dixon, like you're a punter, whatever. That's the job. You want to be an elite quarterback? You want to win the MVP? That's what you got to do.
And that is why I think Russell was as hard on himself post-game as he's ever been.
I'm sure he is.
You know, Russell's usually like Pete. I mean, it's usually just uber positive, and he was crystal clear. I mean, those three plays cost us the game.
I thought we played a great game except for those three plays, I mean, honestly. And those are my fault. So, you know, there's so much that we can do, and we have so much confidence. Our confidence is not going to waver. They're a great football team, too. And we knew it was going to be a battle. It always is down here and whenever we play. You know, nothing really changes except for the fact that we just have to tighten up some things. I have to be better, which I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to playing the next game. I wish we could play tomorrow. And that's just our mentality, and we'll be back stronger, we'll be better.
Probably was even a little bit more the body language, right? It's not just the simple words. It's just I've got to be better.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it. He threw three picks in the game. He failed. And honestly, I'm more upset about the two failures in the final drive than the three picks. I'll be perfectly honest with you, and I know there are people who are not going to want to hear it. I'm not going to worry too much about Russ throwing some picks this year. You want to let Russ cook? Part of the deal is you're going to have some more picks.
These weren't like that. These were interceptions of just a lack of concentration.
But
he wasn't throwing it into traffic. He
weren't
getting tipped up. These were foolish
throws. They come from a mentality of aggressively throwing the ball down the field all the time.
Yes.
He was not even being aggressive. He was lackadaisically lobbing.
They come from a mentality of throwing the ball aggressively down the field all the time. You're going to have more picks. You're throwing the ball more often.
Pete Carroll's always told us. Pete Carroll has always said, I want balanced football because the more you throw it, the more opportunities there are for things to go wrong. And for the Seahawks, they don't have a history of throwing the ball all the time in all these plays. Like, this is definitely going to happen more often because they're just not used to it.
And it's okay. By the way, it's working out for the offense in general. Like, I'm not mad about it. I'm not trying to be a jerk to the cooking people or anything. Like, this just goes with the territory. Everything in life has trade-offs. This is not a football thing.
It's a
life thing.
If you're going to quote Larry Hills, you better give him credit.
Sorry. Sorry, Papa Larry.
Thank you.
Popularity or Crazy Larry? What do we go with?
It's Papa. Oh,
sorry. My dad was always Crazy Larry.
Yes.
Sorry.
He's right. You're right. This is a trade-off. The one year that Russell cooked more than ever before in his life was at NC State, and there were a lot of picks. And you know what?
They're NFC Championship game against the Packers. Did you blame that? Oh, well, he's throwing the ball too much.
No, I blame Jermaine Kearse for the ball continually bouncing off his hands. Actually, you want to know who I blamed? Kearse. The ball kept bouncing off his hands.
The first pick, Kyle, to your point, was lackadaisical. He thought there's no way Buda Baker's running through all this traffic, and I'm going to toss it to Chris like I have every time on this play, and he got burned. The second pick was absolutely, I'm going to force the issue. He thought DK was going deep. DK stopped on his route when Russell let it go, and that's an interception. And then the last one was, you know, versus a pressure look there, he decided to be aggressive and gamble and said, I'm going to go for it here. I'm thinking they're coming. And instead of waiting and holding it, maybe taking a sack as he would have in years past, he said, I'm going to take my shot here, and got burned, throwing right into all the dropping defenders. So I would say two of the three of those were because, yeah, this is not, I'm going to just take a sack and punt it and live to play another day. This is, I've got to score. We've got to score 30-some points, to Salk's point. Everybody I'm playing against at the quarterback position is going to be better against my defense than they've ever been before.
And I know you got off schedule in your final couple drives, and you had an offside. Like, you had a holding call on David Moore, physical mistake more than a mental one, right? I mean, it's a good call. I don't think anybody mad about that call. I mean,
No, not the call.
Right.
The play. But yeah, not the call.
But I mean, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, he's trying to make a play. It was an aggressive mistake. To me, that's not a mental mistake like Benson Mayoa's. It's a physical mistake. He thought that he could get away with it and it didn't work. But
he's throwing a pick on 3rd and 14 in overtime is not a product of let Russ cook.
I didn't say it was, but throwing three picks in a game, it's going to happen. You're going to get more. It's just going
over,
to
over
be
the previous
natural
7 years, Kyle, or 8 years when Russell was started on that play.
Over the previous 5 games.
Well, over the previous 5 years.
Russell had a clunker.
Let's keep it this simple.
He made 3 really bad decisions. It wasn't because of play calling.
Yeah, but let's
You're
look
giving
at
him
it.
An out with this.
I'm not. It's going to happen. Let's look over the 3 of Russ's picks this year have come in the end zone, right?
Correct.
3 of them? I mean, take a look. Generally, the Seahawks in the past would be running the ball down there. When you get to the
DK Metcalf pick was from 30 yards out.
When you get down there, the Seahawks like to run the ball. If they're running the ball instead of throwing it, 2 of them came within the 5.
Correct.
2 of them came inside the 5.
And Russ cost them points.
Absolutely. And I'm not saying he didn't. I'm just saying that's going to come with the territory sometimes. If you're handing the ball off, he's unlikely to throw a pick. I guess.
Russell's greatest strength through 9 years of many of them.
By the way, they're not fumbling as much this year as normal because they're not running the ball as much.
I was just going to say, we're going to hit it.
They're not. They have barely fumbled
that guy
all
never
year.
Turns the ball over.
They have barely fumbled all year. So I'm
life's about trade-offs.
It's just a trade-off.
Here is going to be moving forward. Here's going to be the question, because Russell's one of his great strengths through the first 9 years or 8 years of a balanced offense, and one that can, you know, for the first 7 of it, play elite defense, is his governor and his risk-taking and putting the ball in harm's way was as good as anybody in the history of the game. And we talked about that from day one, but a big reason why he won the job. Like, yep, I'll scramble around, or I'll take a sack, or I'll throw it away, or I'm not going to give the ball away.
He ran so
And well, yes, these were, you know, the turnovers on the season. Mm. The interceptions are up on the season. How many on the season now? 6?
Six picks in six games.
I mean, you're on pace. You're on pace to throw 16 interceptions.
I've always said this about Ross. It's not that he throws picks. It's when and how.
It's the picks he throws.
He really saves it up for the worst picks. Oof. And I love the way he played that game, honestly, Sunday night. He was moving so much better. He's running down the field.
He was out to prove that Kyler Murray is not any better than him. I'm going to run my backside off to run it right up Kyler Murray's face.
Hey, do you know what you're doing for Thanksgiving yet? Have you, like, figured out? Because generally, I'm a restaurant guy for Thanksgiving, at least over the last few years.
Last couple of years, you've adapted.
Buffet, that's kind of been our thing. And now, like, it's been confusing what to do for Thanksgiving. Well, here's the thing. We're just about a month, roughly, from Thanksgiving. And I know it's obviously going to look different. But 31st floor, Ascend Prime, exquisite, all-inclusive, customizable brunch.
Okay.
Are you listening? Are you talking to me?
There's a lot of buzzwords in there, brunch.
Are you talking to the hundreds of thousands that are going to listen to this podcast? Who are you talking to? Me or the listeners?
Kyle. I'm just talking to Kyle.
Go on.
Well, really.
Oh, man.
I can't talk to Howdy about this. He's getting too excited.
You would be so disappointed in my performance at this point.
I know. Kyle goes.
I'm talking to Kyle. He would have a one quarter slice of ham.
Stay safely seated at your socially distanced table while you're choosing from a revolving carousel of bites, beverages, in a contemporary tableside setting. How about that? Prepare your palate, Brock. We got an enchanting world of never-ending flavors. Taking in the panoramic view of the Pacific Northwest. Good a view as you're going to find. 31st floor in Bellevue at Ascend. So yeah, tableside experience, completely reimagined, all-inclusive price. So it's, you got all the benefits of the buffet, but without actually having to get up and mingle with all the people who are probably going to infect you with something. Hmm. How about that? So you're going to have to book. You got to go to ascendprime.com. Start thinking about if that's your plan for Thanksgiving. Ascendprime.com. Restaurants for Thanksgiving are awesome, by the way. I've done this, as you know, the last, what, 5 years or so? The whole idea of being at a restaurant for Thanksgiving is great. There's no cooking and there's no cleanup.
No dishes.
Now, there's no leftovers, which is the only disadvantage.
No, not necessarily. You can get some leftovers to go.
Not with a brunch. Not with an all-inclusive brunch. Yeah. Okay. That's not how that works. But it's worth it. That trade-off is 100% worth it to not have to clean up that meal or to cook it. It's great. So, yeah, I'm a big fan of the restaurant for Thanksgiving and even bigger fan of AscendPrime.com. Brock, this can't be a whole negative thing. Like, there has to be some positivity laced into this conversation because as aggravating as a loss like that is, you still score all those points. You're still 5-1. I mean, Russell's still playing incredible football. Because there is criticism and accountability, as Richard Sherman and everybody else always wanted, doesn't mean that he's not he moved and ran as well in that game as I've seen him run in a few years.
He had almost 500 yards of offense himself.
That's pretty good.
Yes.
That's pretty good. DK is, how about the game from Tyler Lockett? Well, the list of receivers who have done that ever were like
him,
Steve Largent, and
Jimmy Smith,
who had one great game for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
He had almost 300 yards.
So there are still, you're going to get Jamal Adams back here. We're going to see snacks. I mean, like, there's some things that are trending upwards for the Seahawks, and you're going to need it as you go through this incredibly difficult stretch. So, you know, I'll also say that Russell Wilson maybe not playing that well or at the very least feeling the blame on his shoulders for that game, I think he comes back and reacts well to that. I think not that Russ is an egomaniac or a head case or he gets too comfortable, gets too lazy, but aren't you most comfortable when Russell has to prove himself?
Yes, and when he's got to bounce back?
Yeah.
Yes.
I feel really good about that.
Right after he throws a pick, I'm positive they're going to go score.
Right. I mean, he's
not going to take this.
His ability to not compound errors, but instead just get everything fixed, is pretty remarkable. It's one of his, if not his, greatest strength. So, don't you feel really good now moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, the gauntlet of games now is no joke. I mean, the Niners and the Rams and the Bills, and you know, I mean, I don't know if I feel great moving forward. They've got to clean a lot up, and the competition's going to get very, very stiff, and the margin of error is going to be small. But do I believe Russell's going to continue to be phenomenal? Yes, I do.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. What's going on with Bobby, though? And this is one of those, how do you have an uncomfortable conversation like this? Do you have to start with love? Do you have to start with respect? Because I don't want to cheapen it.
I think you got to rip the Band-Aid off because there is nothing you're going to say that will qualify and satisfy the people on the other side of this.
What do you guys do? What do you three men do when you have uncomfortable conversations with your wives?
I don't have them. What are you talking about?
Just swallow it.
Wait, what?
Try to fix it on my own.
What?
I'm not. I don't know.
Swallow it.
Yeah. No thanks.
We're going to need a different hypothetical. It does not compute.
Why would I ever want to do that?
But yeah, it's like Mike said, it's love, it's nurture. It's
a hard one.
We're going to get through this. We're all good. It's just a blip.
Brock, it's time to talk about Bobby. What's going on?
Mike, you were talking about Bobby last year.
You were talking about Bobby last year.
I was. But last year, it was pretty clear that, like, there were issues in front of him, or he was helping people, or like it was.
No, it was a base defense. They played it 67% of the time, and it was a disaster. So they played base, and I think we all agreed, and I think the coach and staff went back and went, yep, probably not the wisest way to go about playing. So I think that the lion's share of the blame fell to the unit.
Right.
In kind of that philosophy that was just felt misguided then and still feels that way today.
Yeah, and it was easy to kind of look at Bobby and say, all right, Bobby's still Bobby. And he had all the tackles and everything else last year. Just he didn't have sort of the wow plays. And so you say, all right, well, I'm sure it's just sort of, I mean, they've just given him the big contract. He's taking on the leadership role. There are all these things. You'd be like, okay. But he still looked like a good player. He just didn't look like Bobby Wagner. He didn't look like a superstar. Brock, I'm watching Bobby Wagner right now. Is he still a good player?
Whoa. Is he a good player?
I don't know enough to know the answer to this question. I really need it.
Howdy, would that characterize as ripping the Band-Aid off?
Whoa.
Well,
Band-Aid is off. Wound exposed.
I don't mean it to be,
like,
honestly.
Like, what's his war? What is his wins above the most average middle linebacker in the league?
Not much right now. And he's making $18 million a year. I mean, those are the facts. And I would kind of frame it this way. And I was listening to a broadcast this weekend, and I think it was actually Tony Romo. It was the Niners game that I was watching at the airport. And you know what? Fred Warner's the best middle linebacker in the game. I mean, that was Tony Romo's point, is he watches all the tape and he watches these games. And in his estimation, the best middle linebacker in the game is in San Francisco in your own division right now. Jalen Smith is the leading tackler in all the NFL. Now, he plays on a terrible defense in Dallas, but you watch him play and you're like, man, that dude's making a lot of plays. Now, Bobby is 1, 2, 3, 4, still fifth in the league when it comes to total tackles. But Devin White, the Tampa Bay linebacker, is playing better than he is. I mean, these are just the realities. When you're paid $18 million, which is $3 million more a year than any other middle linebacker in the game.
The value thing, obviously, we have to have a conversation about in a moment, because I'm not sure. I don't know that I want to blame Bobby Wagner here. I'll explain in a sec. But Brock, is he even a good player right now?
He's a good player. Yes, he is a good player. He is not the best middle linebacker in the game. Right now, he is not playing.
Is he an average middle linebacker?
What's that?
Is he an average one?
No, he's a good middle linebacker.
Okay,
he's not great, and he's not elite. He's a good middle linebacker. He's in the upper half to probably – I mean, I think that's where if you – and that's the advantage that I have of getting to see the entire league this year and get to watch most of these guys. I mean, you still want him on your team, but as far as just the juice, as far as the energy, I watched that coach's tape with a real – and I tried to watch him a lot defensively because he's your middle linebacker. He's the one taking ownership after the games. He's the one that now three times post-game has said, this has got to change. We got enough talent. This has got to change. We got to turn this thing around. He knows elite defense. And I'm seeing a guy that is not playing with the stinger and the edge and just the fire. And I don't know, again, if that's scheme, if that's people in front of him, if that's frustration. There's any number of reasons. Mike, he is still a good linebacker in this league. He's still the guy that you want from a leadership perspective, a sacrificial standpoint, everything else. But the dude is got to turn it up. He's got to ramp up, in my mind, the intensity tenfold. Because I think this defense feeds off him. And, as we said last segment, when Jamal Adams was in there the first couple weeks of the season, we saw a little bit more juice out of Bobby. But taking on blocks, knocking people out, making game-changing plays, playing with a relentless – I could show you the actual game tape, four or five plays, where you're like, man, that's just not that's not the Bobby that we watched the first – 5+ years of his career, just hair on fire every single snap. So I think that is a fair critique and criticism. He's still a very, very good player, and I think still has the physical attributes to be an elite middle linebacker in this league.
Well, I hope that what you say is right, because when I watch this, unfortunately, my mind doesn't go to Bobby. My mind goes to the decision that they had to make just over a year and a half ago. They had three players who all wanted and needed big money. They could only pay two of them, right? They chose Russell Wilson. Does anybody have any issue with them paying Russell Wilson today?
Nope.
I hope not.
No.
I know there were some at the time who said the Seahawks shouldn't pay Russell Wilson. I hope there's not a soul watching this team right now and saying that that is the case. I mean, they made the right decision to pay Russell what they paid him. Okay, that left Frank Clark and Bobby Wagner. They chose to pay Bobby Wagner $18 million a year and to trade Frank Clark. As you sit here today, and by the way, I thought that was the right thing to do. So I'm calling. Was that the right thing to do? As you sit here today. Now, Frank Clark's numbers, by the way, not spectacular either.
No.
In case you think Frank has just been a mega beast in Kansas City, he did have 8 sacks last year and helped them get to a Super Bowl and win a Super Bowl. He has 3 sacks in 7 games this year. He's on pace for, what, 7 sacks or so this, 7 or 8 sacks. I mean, like, he's been good.
Yep.
He's been good.
Yep.
He's not been great. He's been a very good player. Not necessarily incredible. But as you watch this team, who would have been easier to replace? Who would have, you know, which do you need more? I mean, it's easy to say you need help at defensive end more than you need help at linebacker because you signed Bobby Wagner.
Yeah.
You feel good about that decision, Sam?
I do. Yes, because that encapsulates a lot. That is your captain. That's your leader. That is a hard worker. That is a reliable. I mean, that goes into, you know, someone who posts, someone that everyone believes in. That is just, yes, I still feel that was the right decision. He just has to, he has to play better. He has to play harder. He has to play more violently. You know, that's what I want, you know, and I talk to Dave and Paul and the defensive guys. So I don't want to speak totally out of turn. And I don't know, Mike, the job of a linebacker. I think I can critique a quarterback because I know what that should be. And then ultimately my NFL career is largely defined by what it shouldn't be. So I feel like I know that spectrum well. I do watch, you know, a lot of tape now. And I watch, you know, the middle linebacker for the Rams, who's just a little energizer bunny. I watch Fred Warner for the 49ers, who's sideline to sideline and playing the ball and playing zone coverage and not just running to spots, but actually being sticky and covering people, right? And taking the ball away, right? Jordan Brooks played good, man. He played hard. Wasn't in perfect position all the time. But, you know, you put that game tape on and you have no idea. Right. If you were just third party, totally objective, and you just watched that Arizona game and said, you know, who's the highest paid player on this defense there? You'd be hard pressed to believe that it's 54. You'd be like, no, that can't be, you know, in that game. I don't know who you'd point to. KJ played pretty good. Jordan actually looked fast. Jordan played hard. Jordan made the best defensive play of the game on the third down scramble down by the goal line on Kyler where he chased him down, hawked him. That's Bobby. Right, that was Bobby chasing Cam Newton down, and I guess he did earlier this year. Or no, that was Jamal actually earlier this year. Mm-hmm. But that has been Bobby. So that would be my challenge, and I'd say that, you know, to him is, man, you know, where's just that intensity that sets the tone for everybody else that you're seeing right now from Jalen Smith, that you're seeing from Levante David, that you're seeing from Devin White, that you're seeing from Fred Warner, that you're seeing.
So let me ask you a question then, and trying to be fair to Bobby here.
Yeah.
Is that position so reliant on everything else around him that maybe he can't? That he, as you said, he still has all the physical attributes. It's not like he, you know, lost his intelligence or his ability to read plays. Is that position so dependent on the guys up front that he can't make the big plays he always has?
Yes and no. Yes and no. And obviously, look at those guys that I listed. Look at Tampa Bay's D-line and look at San Francisco's D-line. Look at the Rams' D-line.
It sure sounds like the guys with the best D-lines look like great linebackers.
Yeah. And you know what?
Ray Lewis always looked great with Haloti Ngata and the rest of those guys up in front. I mean, like, for years, these things work together. If you're going to, and this is really the point I want to make. If you're going to spend $18 million on Bobby Wagner, why do you throw trash in front of him? What are you doing? Like, if you're going to throw $18 million at a middle linebacker, a guy who is completely reliant on the people in front of him, why don't you put great people in front of him? Isn't that important?
Why do you have Greg Olsen instead of a defensive lineman? An average defensive lineman is $3 million. You paid twice that for Greg Olsen.
The Greg Olsen thing will bother me till forever. Why is he here? He's not bad. He's not playing bad. He's one of your 9 tight ends. He's that much better than Luke Wilson would be in that spot? That much? It would be so terrible if you had to give more reps to Hollister again and to Disley? You spent $7 million on that guy. And in the meantime, your $18 million investment is hung out to dry. So either Bobby's not that good anymore, which is a problem because you spent $18 million on a guy who's not that good anymore, or you didn't do everything in your power to let him be great. What are you doing?
Yeah, this is one of your trade-offs is probably fits perfectly here once again. I mean, that was the trade-off.
The trade-off they felt like, of wanting a third tight end?
No, feeling that, you know, we can get Brian Monet, who, by the way, played a pretty darn good game. He actually
so what?
Played is maybe his best game.
Jaron Reed, what is that all about?
They paid Jaron Reed before they paid Greg Olsen. They paid him $10.5-11 million, right? He was their top number one targeted free agent. So they paid Jaron Reed. They would say, Mike, I mean, we did help Bobby. The number one commitment we made this offseason.
Then you're telling me Bobby's not that good.
No, I'm not telling you
that. You can't have this one both ways. Either Bobby's not that good anymore, the guys in front of him aren't that good, but there's some problem there because he's not making any plays.
What if Bobby's really frustrated? What if Bobby knows what elite defense is?
Bobby's
demoralized. You know, we talked about this a couple weeks
ago. He is totally embarrassed and has no idea what to do to fix this problem because it's everywhere around him. The secondary is not good.
Correct.
The defensive line's not good. Without Jamal Adams, they have no spark and no juice, and he's left all by himself.
The Jamal Adams thing is clearly killing them. It's unfair almost to talk about it because what you just said about the spark and the juice, that's why they got him.
Yes.
And he's not there to provide it. I mean, he's tweeting during the games. You can feel I can feel the spark more than his teammates can during the game. So
Minnesota, he came down at halftime. He said he was watching the game, couldn't stand how flat they were, demanded to go to the sideline and just yell at people, which he did, and got everyone pumped up in the second half.
It's awesome.
So they needed that. That's not Bobby, right? If you were thinking for $18 million a year, that's your captain, your leader, your spark. That's not his personality. That's not what you're getting.
I don't need that. I just want him to go out and make Bobby Wagner plays. That's all I want. Yep. I want the guy.
And Jamal Adams frees him up to do that.
I think he helps. Yes.
I hope you're
and
right.
I think we talked about that the first couple weeks of the season, didn't we?
Those two, for the first two games of the season, were a wrecking crew. They were the Bash Brothers from Mighty Ducks. Like, they were the two guys that just did whatever they wanted and imposed their will on the game. And since Jamal Adams has been gone, it looks just like last year, where there is not a single thing the defense does that's remarkable.
Well, I will sit here and hope that when Adams comes back, hopefully next week, and when Snacks gets in there and he hopefully returns to form, like immediately, despite the fact that he's still not playing.
Just stands there and doesn't move. Fill space.
That those two things get Bobby going. Because nothing would be a bigger shot in the arm to this defense than Bobby Wagner making plays.
Yep.
I mean, you can say all you want about a pass rusher, and Brock Week talked about maybe there are guys they could trade for or whatever, but nothing would be a bigger shot in the arm to this team than Bobby Wagner being Bobby Wagner.
No question. It's got to come from within. I mean, that's just In this season, more than any other, right, where development was stunted for your young people, it's going to come from your veteran difference makers. And while Jamal has not been here a long time, he's played in this league, and you know his juice that he brings. It is unparalleled. I do think it frees up Bobby because I also, you know, you just kind of watch his last few games. It doesn't look like he's having any fun. And how can he when you're giving up 480 yards a game? How can he when his boy Howdy said you're not able to cover one-on-one outside? You're not able to stop people on the perimeter, right? When you have known it, right? I think that also when Bobby has known it, he knows what it's supposed to look like. He knows what it's supposed to feel like. He knows what it's supposed to be when it's all put together. And right now it's a bunch of parts that aren't put together. And yeah, I think you feel some of that frustration from him as well.
All right, those are some meaty, meaty subjects. I mean, you know, Russell Wilson, problems with the defense, Bobby Wagner, mistakes. These are the meatiest of the meaty. So to finish this off, before we get to how much people hate you, which is always fun.
Yeah, you. What do you mean?
Yeah, people hate you. I don't know why.
Really?
Well, they must not know you. It's got to be. It's not that they hate you. They just haven't gotten to know you yet.
That's true.
I think it's that. We'll get to some mean tweets for Brock here in a moment. First, some rapid fire questions, Brock. Can we spend a couple of minutes on the DK play? It's just, it is everything you want in sports, isn't it? Don't you love that play?
Oh my gosh. I forget who, maybe it was Heap, somebody tweeted and said Pete Carroll's going to be showing that in his next lifetime.
As he should.
Yes, when he's coaching and you want to know what it looks like to play the hardest, the longest, to compete on every play, to compete for every blade of grass, to never, ever give in. And not only Pete, I mean, every coach is going to show that. You know, these defensive coaches, Mike, they love to show these tapes of hustle plays and pursuit, right? And these teams that pursue. And every one of these coordinators I've always talked to on the road for 13 years are all the same. You know, we got to run the ball. We got to run and hit. We got to run and hit. You know, camera club. How many guys can get in the picture at the end of the play? You know, we just want guys playing with relentless energy. After an interception and to see where he started on that play.
Insane.
God bless Chris Carson. He probably, his foot was already sprained. Did Chris move 1 inch? Nope.
Go ahead. Well, Chris Carson coach knew take Chris, he didn't like, have a shot.
I'm out. Russell, who is running better this year than he has in years.
No shot.
And even had a little bit of an angle. I was like, yeah, well, I'll give it my best and I'm out. And then here comes Secretariat down. Down the stretch.
It's kind of what it looked like. I mean, he's just such a physical.
Michael Johnson in his gold cleats.
Yes. Oh. The upright running style.
Yeah, arms pumping.
My gosh.
That's ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, it just shows off everything. It's everything that makes DK great because it's the combination of his attitude with his physical ridiculousness.
And his monstrous size.
Yes.
Just his shadow first encapsulated Buda Baker like an eclipse. Like, here he comes. Buda Baker's looking back like, oh,
what
oh
is
no.
That?
He starts like swatting away like as a cat. Like, oh, no, please, please, sir, spare me.
And you know Buda's ticked, right? Once he
caught
beats
me?
Russell. Once he beats Russell, he's like, I'm good. He didn't slow down, by the way, and he still runs 4.5. I think right. He was even high 4.4s at the combine. I mean, he's not in any way slow. He's in the absolute prime of his career. He's still hauling.
And,
you know,
he didn't just catch him. He accelerated through him.
He was still gaining speed.
Oh, yeah. If the field had been, like, if they were instead racing to the goal line, DK would have beaten him by 10 yards.
Yes.
He exploded through him. It's not like he had to make a shoestring tackle. He jumped on his back and dragged him to the ground.
Unbelievable. And it's why people always say, oh, the combine, what's the difference between 4.33 and 4.45? Does it really matter? Yes.
Well,
yeah. And actually, when you see those guys go full tilt, you see him huck people down. You see him, DK, it's why he runs by people. When he's on offense, that was a perfect picture. It gave you an elite. Yeah. What does it really look like on the field? How does that translate? That's what it looks like when you're just world class fast.
A couple of things on this. One, it reminded me, and Brock, you may remember the play of Ben Watson catching Champ Bailey in the 2005 playoffs. Similar kind of play. Bailey gets a pick in the end zone, runs 100 yards, beats, I think it's Kevin Falk who dives at his feet, and he gets past Falk. He thinks he's in. And Ben Watson, who was clear on the other side of the field, a tight end, by the way, physical freaky tight end, blows him up at the goal line. I think it's a fumble through the back of the end zone, one of those touchback deals. I mean, it's a similar remarkable play, and I went back and watched it after seeing this, and I found some weird like NFL Films clip, and it's Bill Belichick saying something like, look, we have this room full of pictures, and all of the pictures are from wins. If it didn't come in a win, it can't be on there. But the only time I've ever come close to putting a picture of a play from a loss was that play. That's how impressive it was to him that he worked that hard and tried all that. And so I think you just that element of effort is just so enormous. It reminded me of one other play, which you're probably not as familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
It's a BB&N game from about 1995.
Sure. Oh, go on.
Wait, now is this senior
go
year
on.
With the new coach?
This is junior
is
year,
oh,
first
coach.
Year with the no, first year with the new
oh,
coach.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Good.
He we went 0-7. We didn't start winning until the next year. But I was playing nose tackle, as you know,
for sure.
My first year at nose tackle, and guy ran through the line, beat everybody, and I took off. I started running. Well, maybe, you know what? Actually, I might have been playing safety, and I came up and then turned around because I had to, like, I caught this guy at the five.
No. It's kind of an important distinction.
You're starting to introduce some doubt
into this
story.
Well,
either
safety?
Way, I was at the, either
were
way,
you
in the backfield
or a nose tackle?
No. I think it was a safety. I come up to the line of scrimmage. So either way, I was at the line
He's
of scrimmage.
He's in the box.
The guy had a good 10, 15 yards on me. And I chased him down, dragged him down from the back at about the 5 yard line.
Wow.
And we, you know,
did you end up holding him on four downs?
Oh,
and
I'm sure
him
we did not.
Zone?
No, we're the worst.
Come on.
We were so bad. We're so bad. No.
It was a turning point for the program.
No. But it was a turning point for me. I think it was the only positive thing I ever got from the coach all year, as he was like, Salky caught
great
this hot. Guy.
He showed great heart.
They sent it to Mayor Menino to come
extra
in.
Extra tea for Salk after the game.
give Salky an extra egg salad sandwich.
More Earl Grey for Salk after that play.
Cut off his crusts.
Yep. There you go. It was my shining moment as a junior in high school. I was able to make a similar play. So,
well, I will tell you this. That will live on, you know, as I said, with Coach Carroll, as long as he ever coaches, yeah, any other defensive coach. That will live with those players, too. Because it wasn't as if the other, I think, you know, side note to this, DK wasn't the one with 15 catches on the game. DK was the one, I believe, with just one catch on the game, correct? Yeah. And you know, it was going to be Tyler's day, and Patrick Peterson was shadowing DK wherever he went. Russell missed him a couple times. He had him on a go route that if he throws it, it's a touchdown. And, you know, so he even missed him a few times. So it wasn't like DK was having this unbelievable start to the game, and all these touches didn't matter. In that moment, you just play relentless. And to his teammates, man, for now and forever and around the league, they will not forget that one, man. Yeah, that was
I don't want to compare it to this other play because I think that it's an overrated play, but it's got something in common with Derek Jeter. And whether you want to say Jeter diving into the stands at Fenway, or whether it's Jeter and his little play to get Jeremy Giambi, who slowed up at where he makes a little flip. I mean, when your best players make hustle plays,
yes,
that's a good thing.
Yep.
And I'm not calling DK Metcalf, Derek Jeter, anything quite like it yet, and I don't like giving credit to Jeets either, but look, when your best players, when the guys who are the most physically gifted and your stars make hustle plays like that, it makes your team better. So what
is LeBron? LeBron in the title game against the Warriors a couple years ago on a fast break.
Absolutely, right? When he chased him down.
Yes, and blocked the shot. Yep. Like, oh my gosh, who can do that?
Very similar.
Who on earth can do that?
Perfect analogy. That's a good one. Hey, speaking of baseball, quickly, the World Series has been awesome. I know it's not rating very well. Have you been watching the World Series? It's been really fun to watch.
I have actually watched almost every game. Saturday night, I was feeling Chris Myers, by the way, diehard Dodgers
right?
fan.
He's happy.
Yeah, big time.
Was he happy at the end of game four?
Well, when we got to the car Sunday morning, yeah, he said, I couldn't sleep.
What did you think of that? What did you make of that play?
Unbelievable.
I mean,
unbelievable.
The whole thing was crazy.
If it's two strikes on him, if you know,
and both strikes are bad calls.
Yeah, they're both a little bit outside the zone.
Neither was a great call. Outside. It could have easily been 3-1 or whatever it was, 2-0 or whatever instead of 2-2.
That guy's hitting .190 on the season.
Sure. Which in baseball like, no now chance. Is like he's a pretty good hitter.
The
guy hits
year.
.190. Wow. Awesome. Mike Zanino. Yeah.
Just incredible. It really has. I've said this, I think I said this on the podcast a couple weeks ago, that baseball, and I was chatting with our director on our crew about this, like baseball and the World Series and these playoff games in particular, to me, are missing the fans more than any other sport because you feel their anxiety. It's on their face. They're eating their nails. It gives you time to shoot into the stands. Like you just feel the weight of all of it, right? Mm-hmm. And it's been nice to actually have
some. They had the guy who caught the home run and then threw his glove onto the field. That was amazing.
Nice.
They had the guy in the really inappropriate shirt who Joe Buck was commenting on, which is also really funny. So not so, many fans, but some memorable ones.
Right.
Yes. So you had a sprinkling, but yes, it just kind of brings back, you flood back with all of the, even though I don't have a dog in the fight at all, I'm not emotionally engaged.
Mike Zanino's fighting Rays?
You've get a little bit of the, like, you get to see some finger and hand wringing, which is really my favorite part of watching the World Series when your team's not in it. Just seeing the stress on people.
Yes.
And the way they start wringing their hands and twisting up their
peeling
fingers.
Their skin.
I mean, they just
want, oh God, it's so uncomfortable.
I love it. I absolutely love it. And the end of that was just remarkable. And just the shot of a Rosarina, the slow motion or the still of him kind of tapping the home plate over and over again with that huge smile. That was pretty great.
So if the Dodgers get it done, is Kershaw the MVP with two wins? Game one, game four?
Maybe. I mean, Turner's been really good.
Seager's been phenomenal.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see what happens here in the last couple games. Hey, anybody else pretty happy Antonio Brown signed elsewhere and spared us that?
Exhale.
Whew.
Oh, man.
No one should be happier about this than Russ. Russ took some bullets. He looked bad, and there was no reason to do so.
I think Russ is heartbroken.
Should have? Yes.
You want to know why?
Is he?
No.
No. Not one bit.
First he demanded Greg Olson. Then he went to Antonio Brown.
Whew. Hey,
and
Russ, stay out of personnel.
And miss.
Russ, you're not a personnel guy.
For months, lobbied for Antonio Brown. For months.
Not a personnel
guy. The only person posting videos of playing with him in the offseason.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Russ threw three picks in this game, Kyle. We debated earlier whether or not it was because of letting him cook. It was not. Let me be clear. It's just karma. Karma came back and bit him right in the butt.
He had to stand up at that press conference and take arrow after arrow in his answers. I mean, you don't see Russell Wilson flustered much. He was flustered.
As he should be.
And for no good reason. He didn't need to put himself out there like that.
Guy signed elsewhere.
Russell just kept saying, well, the reality is. It was like, Russ, dude.
Russ, I don't think you know what the reality is.
Yourself and stammering.
Stop doing this. Yeah, so I was pretty darn happy to see Antonio Brown sign in Tampa so that we didn't have to deal with this, right?
Yes. Yeah. DK and Tyler are plenty good enough. Would he be in insurance in a COVID world and an injury world and everything else? And, you know,
he would have made them worse on the field.
Insured disaster.
You really want insurance in the form of a guy who can't handle getting...
Nope.
When 15 targets isn't even enough for him?
Nope.
Can you imagine him sitting on the sideline or being in the game as Tyler Lockett racked up 200 yards and three touchdowns? He lost his mind.
Yes.
You think he makes the play DK Metcalf? I mean, if you ever needed some sort of a juxtaposition, imagine how Antonio Brown handles that day versus DK Metcalf. Like, what else do you need to say? Right?
He's a Buccaneer. Go Bucks.
I hope he tears them apart.
Tom Brady's obsessed with that guy.
I know.
Tom, dude, enough.
I hope he tears them apart from the inside out. That would be good.
Well, Bruce Arians' leadership is, you know,
he'll make it fine. Hey,
well, it was really great because Bruce was asked about, I was listening to some national radio, he was asked in March or April about acquiring Antonio Brown, and Bruce at that point is like, no.
Nope.
I know that guy. Not going to happen.
No chance. Not a fit.
Have you heard your boy Peyton torching Bruce Arians?
The fifth read is who Tom Brady throws this touchdown to. He gets to the fifth read. Let me tell you why he gets to the fifth read. Because he knows the play. He's run it since 2000 when he was drafted, okay? He knows the play. Why the Bucs weren't running his plays earlier in the season, I'm not sure. My guess that when Tom broke into that guy's house illegally, the settlement was that Tom would let that guy call the plays for the first couple of games. Whoever owns the house that looks like Byron Leftwich's house that Tom broke into, I think he said, hey, look, if you don't press charges, you can call the plays against the Saints. So that's what happened. So I'm just kind of breaking the news right here. Schefter didn't even know that.
Dude, he said that Bruce Arians was like essentially a random guy off the street for the first few games of the year.
Bruce and Byron. I think the fact that Bruce has let Byron Leftwich be in charge of calling Tom's plays.
I like the insinuation that Brady's a criminal. That he broke when he illegally into this guy's house.
He throws in the word illegally.
Yeah, Antonio Brown has been convicted of felony burglary, not Tom Brady.
Right.
Goodness.
Yeah. So anyway, strange things are afoot in Tampa Bay. Saw some stories that there may be some acquisition, that there's still an opportunity for the Seahawks to bring in a somebody, defensive end. Do you like Ryan Kerrigan? Do you like Jacob Martin trying to get him back? I mean, like, is there anything out there that
Everson
you
Griffin
work
on the trade block?
I mean, like, any of these guys, Brock?
Yeah.
Nothing.
I mean, the good news is a bunch of these guys, unlike Snacks, you know, have actually been playing. So Everson Griffin's been playing. Kerrigan and Jacob Martin's been playing. I mean, the one guy to me would be Carlos Dunlap, but I mean, I think that's going to be too costly. Unless you've got, for Joe Burrow, maybe a receiver, maybe a tight end, maybe an offensive guard. Maybe,
they got tight ends. They could spare, for sure.
Yeah, maybe there. But he'd be the one out of Cincinnati.
Ryan Kerrigan has four sacks.
Yeah, he's a good player. But Washington's still in the playoff race.
Yeah, he's a good player. That's going to be a tough one to do. I mean, that guy from Cincinnati is basically going to get cut pretty soon. Like, he's posting his house on... I was reading this morning. He's been posting his house for sale on Twitter. Like,
he's going to Jamal Adams' blueprint out of...
Carlos Dunlap would help you in the run game. Carlos Dunlap would help you in the passing game. Carlos Dunlap would be the guy. If you ask me of anybody, he'd be the guy in Cincinnati, and he's trying to do what others before him have done and work their way out of town. You know, the question is just going to become, do you have any tradable assets? Because he's going to be a guy that a lot of people are going to want. So
they got Geno Atkins, too.
What's that?
Bengals have Geno Atkins, too.
Oh, that guy's a
monster. Bring them both in.
Yeah,
yes.
Go.
Just bring them both in at the same time. All right. Brock, it was a rough week for. Here's the thing. You're sort of new to the NFL audience doing Fox, right?
Yes.
But now that you've had Detroit games like a couple of times, they're correct. At first they're like, I don't even know who this is.
I mean, I was frankly disappointed in the mean tweets the first few weeks. Right. I'm like, maybe nobody's watching. Unlike college where there was at times I'd be loaded with, you know, I'd have to like a strong filter of which would be the best to give Howdy. First few weeks NFL, not so good.
Now, but you do a couple of Detroit Lions games in a row. You've now done a couple of Atlanta Falcons games. Like, all of a sudden, fan bases are starting to take notice.
I feel like the Lions got the C-list commentators with Greg Jennings and Brock Heward today laughing my off.
C-list.
Brock Heward seems to have something against the Lions. Maybe it's just me, but that's the vibe I get. He clearly didn't like the call in the Penn State game, as he said it about 10 times already, too.
Do you have something against the Lions?
No, sure? They love me, actually. They're 2-1 with me. I think the majority of the fan base wants me back.
How about the team themselves?
I feel like I played a role. You know, I called them out on a radio program, told them to be more violent.
And?
Matt Patricia didn't like it, let me know about it. And, you know, now he's using words, my words, like violent.
Yeah.
So I think I played a role.
Brock Heward definitely bet someone that he could say self-scouted 59 times in a broadcast.
Shut up, Stelton. That's not nice.
Only once this podcast, by my count.
Right. Yeah.
Can someone please tell Brock Heward he doesn't know everything? Talking over Myers, laughing at Pereira, just terrible to listen to.
Now that's a guy after my own heart. That I can agree with. Thank you. Finally, the right kind of mean tweet. Brock, don't you know you don't know everything?
You're laughing at Mike Pereira?
Yes.
That's belittling, yes. Brock.
Yeah.
Why would you laugh at Pereira?
Because he was wrong on a call. I mean, it's just flat wrong.
Again,
just,
Brock thinks he knows everything.
The fact trying to take the side of the officials, and I thought it was humorous.
The fact
case in point, Brock.
Aren't you just happy that you have Pereira instead of Terry McAuliffe or any of these other guys? I mean, the other ones are all awful.
Yes.
I mean, like, you could have Mike Carey. Or like, you should be thankful that you have Mike Pereira.
Well, one of the guys that we had late in my ESPN career fell asleep during the game. We looked over to him. He was in the booth. He was
Austin.
Oh no! This was me doing college games.
John Perry still doing games.
Yeah.
What? Wow.
In the booth?
No.
Or on the field?
Yes.
Whoa.
Oh, good. We got Brock Heward on the Falcons call, so he can. On Matt Ryan for 3 hours.
Whoa. Goodness Whoa. Gracious.
All right. Tone it down, Falcons. Was that Bunker?
Why are Lions fans consistently subjected to listen to Brock Heward? Haven't we suffered enough already?
That's good.
Yeah, that's fair. That's a good one.
How does Brock Heward fail up into an NFL gig? I'm sorry, Lions fans.
That one really captured the depression. It's like a vocal fry.
Shut up, Brock Heward. The Lions have worked up a tab on bad calls. I think the NFL can yield to us on this one.
Man, the Detroit fans are vocal.
Yeah.
They're passionate. Yeah, they're very passionate.
You think about how frustrated they must be. Yeah.
What did we as Lions fans do to deserve getting stuck with Brock Heward on back-to-back weeks?
Well, you paid Matt Stafford.
Brock has literally said wow 20 times in the last 5 minutes.
Hey, Brock Heward, you are hot garbage on a Falcons game.
Brock Heward is so annoying. No kidding, Matt Stafford, quote, just wanted an opportunity.
Brock, I think the college fans are more creative than the pro fans.
Oh, no question.
More creative.
No question. A little more personal.
Smarmy cartoon tough guy Brock Heward telling Chris Myers that he didn't ask his opinion because he didn't play in the league.
Oh.
Mwah. Beautiful.
Did you do that? Did you give him the big stick?
Whoa. I don't know. Not
Brock,
really.
Cleats, Chris?
Brock, no. Did you say you didn't care about Chris's opinion?
Oh, my. He didn't weigh in on this because you didn't play the game, Chris Myers.
Is that what happened?
Oh, I didn't think you were that kind of guy, Brock.
What happened?
Oh. Wassel's going to beat you up, man. What happened?
You haven't been in the locker room, Chris?
Why did you do that?
The oh, it was all in fun. It was all in jest.
Not to well, that
I don't think
fan.
He was having it.
By the way, that tweet came from Chris Myers. So I mean, you can
one of his burner accounts.
Make your own call.
Borrowed from Kevin Durant.
Oh, how good did that feel, Howdy, to get back into that mode? That feel right?
Oh man, it felt so good.
Good,
so good.
Well, if you can do a couple more Buffalo games, I mean, once you're doing Seattle Buffalo, aren't you?
Philly,
yes.
Do you have Buffalo Philly game? That'd be great.
If you could do Seattle Buffalo and Seattle wins, Buffalo fans gonna be all over you.
Yes,
that'll be mafia.
Good. That'll yep. be pretty good. All right, so we'll look forward to that. Man, I hope that we got Seahawks Niners this week, right? Get back in this thing. Niners looked a whole lot better against New England.
Good.
So, all right, let's step this thing up. You got to see what a loss looks like. Get back into the win column. Brock, this is a lot of fun. Have a great Halloween.
You too. What are the costumes?
I don't know. Of all the holidays, the one I can't figure out in COVID is Halloween.
Oh, true.
What are you supposed to do?
Yeah.
You can't walk around and touch people's candy. Like, what are you doing? I don't know. I don't know what my kids are doing. I don't know what I'm doing.
At least you got Thanksgiving.
Yeah,
well, send me some pics anyway. Send me some pics.
All right, we're done for the day. The hay.
Oh, it's long gone in the barn.
See.
Get to the chopper!